I will tell you this. You don't know this about you, about me and Danny and our feelings about you. You always calm us down.
Yeah.
We get super excited.
He's like the Doug Casper of law.
Yes, we get exactly. We get very excited about stuff, and then your presence brings us back to some normal. And so, thank you for that.
But I will say this: yeah. as calm as he may be, around him is turmoil.
Well,
the world
is turmoil. Yeah. That's why you need people like Ambrose. Yeah. So the other day, last week, I was talking about biometrics in the state of Illinois. I got it wrong, and the state of Illinois, I said, was the one state in the union where it is illegal to gather biometrics. That's fingerprints, facial recognition, those kind of things. You corrected me and said, no, it's not illegal. It is
regulated.
So we're the one state that it's regulated?
We're the one state that has a comprehensive statutory scheme, and particularly one that's been in effect for more than a decade. And what's interesting about it is our regulatory scheme is only in the statute. As many times in Illinois, the statute, in this case BIPA, the Biometric Information Privacy Act, says the regulation should be promulgated or will be promulgated. They have not. And
what does promulgated mean?
Well, what it means is that some agency of the state government will issue regulations, as with respect to OSHA, for example, for the federal government. But no state government has issued any regulations. But at any rate, there still are regulations inside the BIPA statute. And the BIPA statute, in sections that are multiple, requires an employer particularly, let's take an employer as an example, even though it also covers non-employment situations, it requires an employer to create a written policy for a retention schedule, meaning how long is it going to keep the biometric information it collects, and when will it destroy it? In other words, is it within a year, 2 years, 3 years? And also, the employers, in this instance within the workplace, have to issue and obtain written notices and releases from the employees. In other words, the employees have to be put on notice that the biometric collection is occurring.
So in a real-world example of that might be, I come into work, and there is a camera that takes my picture every day to recognize that that's me and that I have a right to be in this place, or just to monitor me. Is that what we're talking about? Is that an example of that?
More typically, it's fingerprint scanning. But bouncing off what you've said, Greg, there are two different things going on. As you like to say, when someone starts a job, they have all these forms they've signed in, and they may not read. One of them would be this. One of them would be a release and a consent that your biometric information, in this instance, fingerprint scanning, be collected. Photographs are typically not considered biometric information, except Facebook got in a huge class action, which it settled in a Biometric Information Privacy Act case, because, of course, they have the additional software on the photos that identify people and do all kinds of things with that. That was interpreted by a court as Facebook, that's biometric information.
Okay. But we were kind of talking off air, and I don't know if this is under this umbrella, but the amount of surveillance and things that companies do when you're working from home, I mean, they're watching everything you do.
Well, I think what you're touching on, Dan, is something in addition to what BIPA covers, which is the common law interest of privacy. There are some doctrines in Illinois, such as intrusion upon seclusion, that wouldn't work in a workplace situation. But how far is too far? In other words, if an employer has video cameras in the bathrooms for its workforce, that may be clearly considered as excessive and a violation of a common law right of privacy. If you're not in the office, though, that is a great question, because if you're in the office, you can be watched the entire time. So the fact that you're not in the office, but someone can use software to track all your key entries, what you're typing, what you're looking at on websites, and maybe be able to look at you.
And they developed, it's called Screen. I was just reading about it this other day, that they can take a shot of you once a minute from your camera. So if you're picking spinach out of your teeth or whatever you're doing, they can take pictures of
you. Is that your boss that can do that?
No, the companies, corporations are doing it. Now, they're supposedly supposed to tell you, but again, would this be under BIPA?
Is that BIPA?
That's not BIPA, because BIPA is biometric information. That is more video surveillance is what you're speaking to. And there may be different state laws that cover that and state doctrines, but it would be, in general, a best practice to inform in the policies that you may monitor video surveillance of employees in common work areas, common break areas. And if they're working from home, you may have to get your policies updated to indicate you may check on them at home.
Wow. What a world we're living in, man. Yeah. It is so crazy. I know we could talk about that longer, and I would like to. It's maybe some other point, but I do want to get to this. We talked to you maybe 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago perhaps, where we talked about employers. It was a simple question. Can an employer legally say you have to be vaccinated with the COVID vaccine or vaccines to return to work? And at that time, you said yes. That's imperfectly within the employer's rights to do so. It's a private business, so on and so forth. Are we still, because since we've talked to you, that noise got loud. And so where are we today? Has it changed at all?
It hasn't changed in this respect. For example, there are three very large companies that already require vaccinations, Disney, Chevron, and Delta Airlines, I believe, and United's probably also looking
into Delta's that. But Delta's like, if you don't have it, you got to pay more for insurance because the average cost of treatment's $50,000.
Well, that's the encouragement, the carrot, and the, as they say, the proverbial stick. Mm-hmm. The reason the noise has gotten louder is because right after we last talked about this subject over 3 weeks ago, the White House said it was going to issue an emergency temporary standard, or ETS, through the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, to regulate private workplaces, about 80 million people, and through that regulation, which is not issued yet and may not be for weeks or months, but through that regulation, have employers either get their employees vaccinated or offer the alternative of weekly testing. There are a lot of questions about that, and it's not even on the books yet or out on the Adobe PDFs. One should expect, though, that the employers will likely have to pay for the time of testing and or vaccination and or time off with that, and that either their insurance or they will bear the costs related to that, and that there will still be the medical and religious exemptions. The religious exemption, it starts lately to become a developing area because you don't have to have a conventional religious belief to be covered by the religious exemption, but you have to have a religious-like belief. It can't be a personal, philosophical, or political opinion against either vaccinations or testing, but it has to be a sincerely held religious belief.
Well, and we were talking about this. Fundamentalist Christians absolutely don't want a vaccine, and fundamentalist Muslims that I've met, because it debases in there. I mean, there are fundamentalist Muslims that won't even have a mirror in their house because a reflection debases the soul, and they feel that way about many shots and vaccines. That's a valid argument to me.
I don't disagree with you, Dan, and I think then the question becomes in the interactive dialogue, okay, if you don't want the vaccine because you have a sincerely held religious belief, then we do need you tested every week or whatever the time span the federal government's going to issue in this emergency temporary standard, and get the test results. Because while you have a sincerely held religious belief, you can't put an undue burden on the employer not to protect the other employees. I was reminded recently by an HR person from Illinois State University. I heard on the radio recently, and she brought up the point, don't forget the people who are vaccinated, that they may complain, you're not protecting me sufficiently. So it's going to be a real balancing act for employers. You have to balance both sides of the lever.
And therein is OSHA. And OSHA is supposed to protect all employees. I mean, that's originally what they started with, their mission, and it's interesting that they're still laying back on this a little bit.
Well, but above OSHA is the big god. It's called insurance.
Yeah, eventually. That hammer hasn't come down yet.
Yeah, because insurance is like, look, we're not going to insure you unless everyone's vaccinated, because our risk factors of the unvaccinated affects everyone there, and that hasn't washed out yet, correct?
Well, I'd still go back to OSHA for two reasons. One is that we will all be reminded that President Nixon signed OSHA in 1970. And the second item is that this emergency temporary standard can only be in effect for 6 months. And OSHA has issued about 9 or 10 of these in the past. And 4 to 5 of them have been knocked down in the courts. So one would hope that they instead do the regular comment period, but they haven't done that.
Ambrose McCall, thank you. You always do clarify things for us. It doesn't always make them easier to take, because it's such a complicated world. It's so
quicksand, Greg. It's constantly changing.
It's constantly changing.